When a person kills with an arrow or with a bullet, so there are two forces or two objects that participate in the murder. There's the person who shot the arrow, and there's the arrow itself. And one of the chidushim that the Torah has about murder is that the action that's carried out by the arrow is misyachis back to the person. The arrow is treated as an agent of the person for performing the murder, but not just as an agent, but an agent which can implicate and make the person who sent it liable. And that's why if a person murders with an arrow, he's going to be chayav. And the same thing applies, let's say, when a person murders somebody else through the agency of water. The person is underwater, and the water is asphyxiating the person, it's preventing him from breathing, and now the person stands right over the ladder that leads out of the pool, and the guy can't put his head over the water. You never touched him. It's the water which is preventing air from entering his lungs. But even so, the Torah was michadesh, that somehow or other there's a bond, there's a connection, almost a connection of agency between the water and the murderer. The water is viewed as a tool of the murderer, as an agent of the murderer, as part of the murderer, and therefore the murder that's carried out by the water implicates the murderer. And this is in general yesod, that in order for a murderer via some other object to be liable, there needs to be a connection, a tseruf, between the murderer and the object which is performing the murder or facilitating the murder. And one of the important things that goes on in terms of decreasing the liability of the murderer, there are a number of important things that can decrease the murderer's liability, but one of them is something which breaks the tseruf and the connection between the object which actually performs the murder and the murderer. So this, I think, is pshat, according to some Rishonim, of sof chama lavo. If you tie up a person at night, at a time when the sun is hidden, it's not out, and then when morning comes and the sun rises, it heats up the atmosphere, and the person dies of heat stroke or maybe of dehydration, so the act of tying the person up is not one which can create sufficient tseruf to the sun, which ultimately murdered the person. It's only when the act of tying was taking place in the presence of the sun, and perhaps in the presence of the sun at a time when the process of the body's overheating had already begun, it's only under those circumstances that the sun can be considered an agent or a part of the murderer, and that therefore the murder carried out by the sun or carried out by the heat can be mitzaref, can connect to the murderer and implicate the murderer. So this is one of the ideas, sof chama lavo, sof tzina lavo, sof yetushim lavo, etc. All of those means that there is some sort of a disconnect, of a nituk, a break in the tseruf between the murderer and the object that carries out the murder. Now, I want to suggest something which is a little bit innovative and needs further thought. The Gemara says that if you tie a person up and he dies from hunger, that you're not liable. And the explanation for that is that the hunger that exists inside of him, this is what the Ramah says, the hunger that exists inside of him at the time that he's being tied up is not sufficient to kill him. Imagine hunger as being like an emptiness, like a black hole. So it's a very small black hole when you're tying the person up. And it grows, it metamorphoses into a larger black hole as time goes on. So that's a case where the object that ultimately killed him, the huge black hole that was a result, that was a more mature stage of the younger hunger that existed when you tied him up, is not the same, they're not the same chifetz. It's one that metamorphosed into the other. The latter is not the same as the former. Therefore, it's like sof chama lavo. The object that killed the person was not present in the world at the time that you performed your action, and therefore, you cannot be mitztarif to that object, and you cannot be implicated by the actions of that object. That's how the Rama understands why tying up a person so that he dies from hunger is going to be potter. Now, as an aside, in brackets, I have the following question. We learn that if a person causes someone else to die of asphyxiation, he dies from lack of air to breathe, in that case, so the murderer is going to be chayiv. Now, the way I understand dying of lack of air to breathe is that a person's body, just like it needs nutrition and it needs glucose, right, it also needs oxygen. Both of those chemical compounds are critical to human survival. When a person dies of hunger, what that means is that he's used up his body's supply of glucose, he's used up his supply of sugar, now there's no more energy left to power up the organs. So if you imagine that a hunger means that at the time he's being tied up, so there's a very small lack of glucose, and then later on that metamorphoses into a larger lack of sugar, and mimela, that larger lack of sugar kills him. So why don't we say the same thing by asphyxiation? That when the guy is initially tied up, so there's a very small lack of oxygen. And then afterwards, you know, maybe a couple of minutes later, there's a very large lack of oxygen. And ultimately what he dies of is a very large lack of oxygen. So there has to be some sort of an important chiluk between the body's need for sugar and the body's need for oxygen. And I don't fully understand yet what that chiluk is, but I want to just be over that there has to be some sort of a chiluk. One way or another, that seems to be how the Rama understands that hunger is different. But I think that one could also look at it a little bit differently. One could argue that when a person dies of hunger, or when a person dies of asphyxiation, even though asphyxiation is separate, let's focus on hunger. So essentially what's happening is that as long as he has certain reserves of sugar or of energy in his body, so he's able to survive, and that energy powers him. Now, let's say that somebody else were to come along and drain that energy out of him, and then he'd have nothing left to replenish. So that other person who drained the energy out of him, or that other force that drained the energy out of him, would have been responsible for bringing his body from above the threshold of survival to below the threshold of survival. But in a case when a person dies of hunger, it's not an outside force that's draining his body of energy. It's he himself that's draining his body of energy. It's the victim's brain, the victim's heart, the victim's lungs themselves, which are depleting the body's energy stores. So in an ordinary case, when I'm mitztaref with some other object, I'm mitztaref with the sun, I'm mitztaref with the water, etc., so then it's the sun, right, which is sort of like shooting daggers into the person. It's shooting heat into the person. It's overheating his body. So the sun then is responsible for this person's murder. And then I, vicariously, through the sun, am responsible for his murder. But when it comes to hunger, it's not the same thing at all. When it comes to hunger, so it's the person himself, it's the person's organs, which are responsible for depleting his energy. I can't be liable vicariously through the victim. I can be liable vicariously through other objects. I can't be liable vicariously through the victim himself. Maybe that's why murdering somebody from hunger is going to be potter. And again, this needs further thought. Another thing which needs further thought is the following shita of Tosfos and of Rabbeinu David. The Gemara tells us that if a person throws a stone straight up into the air, and the stone, without veering to the right or to the left, falls down and kills a person, that the person who threw the stone is potter. However, if the stone veers slightly to the right or slightly to the left, it doesn't fall straight back down, so then the person who threw the stone is chayav, because we say somehow or other that his koach and the wind which blew it are mitztarif, and that therefore, ultimately, when it lands on the victim, it's from his koach. So when it goes straight down, which basically means that it's only the force of gravity that's pulling it down, that's exercising an attraction on it, then he is patur. However, when it's gravity plus the wind that's pulling it down and sideways, so then he's going to be chayev. And the Ran says, what's the difference? What's the difference between these two? In the end of the day, why should the addition of the wind make him liable, whereas gravity makes him not liable? So this is a very perplexing problem. The Ran himself rejects this shita of Tosfos on account of this question. But how are we supposed to understand Tosfos? So I want to make the following suggestion. It's very unlikely to me that this is what Tosfos meant, and therefore I'm very reluctant to make this suggestion because it's not right, not fun to make suggestions that don't accord with the language of the Rishonim that we're trying to suggest. But and so I'm still looking for a better pshat. But as of now, this is the only way for me to understand the distinction between these two cases. So I'm still searching for a better pshat, but as a temporary measure, I want to maybe suggest a similar lambdas to explain this shita. And that is as follows. Gravity, right, is caused by the earth. Right? The earth has a tremendous mass, and it exercises an attraction on all objects that are in its proximity, that they're supposed to fall down towards the earth. Now, it's very possible that whereas a person can be mitzarif to various different forces or ideas without losing his identity, that's very possible because the person's identity is very strong, and if you create a tzeruf and a connection between the person and the fire, or the person and the water, or the person and the sun, so then it's shaykh that connection will have some kiyum, that the person is considered the dominant force, and that the other object, the fire, the water, the arrow, etc., is considered the secondary, the tafel force. But when it comes to gravity, when it comes to the force of attraction that the earth exercises over objects that are in its proximity, so then to say that the earth is an agent of the person, and that the person is liable vicariously through the earth, that's already a much more mind-boggling concept. It's very much more difficult for a person to be mitzarif to the earth and retain his identity than it is for him to be mitzarif to a fire or a water and be considered to be acting vicariously through the water. You can act vicariously through fire and through water. You can't necessarily act vicariously through the earth. The earth is not capable of being your agent as much as these other forces are. The wind, though, is not the same as the earth. When the wind is involved in the movement and the motion of this rock, which ultimately kills the murderer, so it's very easy for you and the wind to be mitzarif and you maintain your identity. So therefore, when the wind pushes the stone a little bit to the side, you're chayev vicariously through the wind. But when the stone falls straight down, you're not chayev vicariously through the earth because it's seraph between a person and the earth does not work in such a way that the earth can be considered like an agent or an appendage of the person himself. I think this may also kind of explain some other ideas where if there's something concrete and something tangible, right, that causes the murder, so then a person can be mitzarif to something which is concrete and tangible. If it's something intangible, like hunger, which is a lack of food or a lack of nutrition, right, like a black hole and emptiness, so it's harder for a person to be mitzarif to something which is abstract than it is for him to be mitzarif to something which is concrete. And that may be another reason why he's potter when it's simply the force of gravity that pulls the object down. I think this is less likely. I just want to beam over, based on this, that if the force which is drawing the stone towards the person, let's say, is not the earth, but rather is a gigantic magnet, right? Let's say that I bring a big piece of metal and the guy is standing in front of a magnet, and then the magnet or even pulls the metal out of my hand and it kills the person. So that would not necessarily have the same din as when I threw a stone up and when the stone came directly down and killed the person, even though it's sort of like an abstract force, maybe it's the koach of magnetism or the koach of gravity that kills the person, but maybe it's the earth which causes gravity to pull the stone down, and person can't be chayev vicariously through the earth. But when it's a magnet that causes the metal to go and kill the person, maybe a person could be chayiv vicariously through a magnet.